Hey, before we get started here, if you are a repeat listener, can you do me a quick favor and rate and review the show right now? We're really making a push to get great guests on the show, and your reviews help us attract the very best guests. So if you could do that, I would really appreciate it. Now let's dive into the show.
There was so much fear about this global financial crisis, they didn't know where things were going. There is money today for multifamily. The question are, where are the deals? So if you can find a deal, you should be able to find the money.
Hey guys, David Robinson here. Welcome to the Lead Sponsor Podcast. As usual, we've got another great episode for you today. I am joined by Gideon Pfeffer. Gideon is the CEO and managing partner of GSH Group. And GSH Group has raised and placed over $300 million of equity and assembled a portfolio of over 7,000 apartment units in five different states worth over $1 billion. And prior to GSH, Gideon operated a very successful aggregation and renovation firm, which focused on single family homes in the Midwest and Southeast. And between 2010 and 2016, Gideon's company purchased, renovated, managed, and sold thousands of single family homes. And then he used that experience and the lessons that he learned from those previous businesses and then directed his attention to the acquisition and renovation, focused mainly on workforce multifamily housing. We have a great conversation with Gideon today. He's got a great story and a great journey about how he navigated tough times through the previous recession in 2007, 2008, as his mortgage business went under, and how he pivoted into the investing world, how he found his business partners, and how ultimately he's accumulated a portfolio worth over $1 billion. And so I'm super excited to share his journey with you today. So without further ado, we've got Gideon Pfeffer. Mr. Gideon Pfeffer, welcome to the show. I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, David, it's nice to be here. Thank you.
And you may need to correct me, Pfeffer or Pfeffer?
It's Pfeffer.
Okay, thank you.
I wasn't sure if I was allowed to do that. I don't make it up.
I appreciate that. Well, look, you've got a great story. I've done a little bit of research on, you know, your story, but I'm excited to share it with our audience today. Before we dive into your story and your journey to where you're at today, let's just get a broad overview of what your business looks like today. What do you guys focus on? What markets are you in? And how is your business structured from a personnel perspective?
Yeah, sure. And thanks for including me in your podcast. Welcome and hello to everybody who's listening. So my name is Gideon Pfeffer. I'm the CEO and managing partner of the GSH Group. I'm the G in the GSH Group. I've got two partners, Shmuel Cohen and Hanan Liss. That's the S and the H. We came together in 2017 to build a portfolio of multifamily apartment units, focusing mostly on workforce housing and America's essential workforce. You know, that we did that before the term essential worker kind of became a household term, but we've always kind of fell right into that category. How do we provide a safe, clean, and affordably priced place to live while, you know, providing investors with like a safe and transparent way to achieve a superior return? That's kind of like up in our vision, our mission all along. It started out with myself and a couple support people, and my wife Jamie's help and coaching, and now we've grown to a team of over 25. That's not including people on site or at properties. We don't self-manage. We use third-party management. So all of our team members in GSH are, you know, vary from different departments such as acquisitions, transactions, asset management, accounting, and ops. Investor relations and investor sales. So that's kind of how we're structured, but we're very collaborative and hands-on and very virtual as well. I've got team members both in the United States, in various states, as well as in Israel.
Got it. Love it. Well, thank you for that overview. Just a couple points of clarification. What markets are you generally focused on at this point?
So we're based in Michigan. And so we built our foundation of our portfolio in Michigan, and then we branched out in the Midwest. So right now we're in Michigan, Ohio, Indiana, and we're also in Maryland and Florida. I'd say that we're somewhat location agnostic, meaning we will go wherever we feel like we can build a footprint. I've said, because I spend time, we have a place down in Florida, excuse me, and you know, anywhere I can get to on in a 3-hour plane ride, you know, we don't go too far west. Michigan is in the East Coast time zone. People sometimes think it's in Central, but it's East Coast. So, you know, going to the West Coast, you kind of lose a day of travel at times. So I would say we primarily focus east of the Mississippi River in Texas. But I mean, we've made offers up and down the Mid-Atlantic, in Tennessee, in Georgia, in the Southeast, in Texas. You know, and with a competitive market environment, we've been successful in the 5 markets that I mentioned.
Great. Love it. And you didn't mention this, but since 2017, since forming your group in 2017, looks like you have acquired around just over 9,000 units, a $1 billion portfolio, and raised a little over $300 million in equity. So no small feat to accomplish in the last, you know, roughly 5 years. So congratulations on your success. Well, let's back up and let's talk about how you got to where you're at today. Obviously, there's a story before 2017. So let's go back and talk about, you know, your first experience in the real estate world, what that looked like, and how things progressed from there.
Yeah, sure. So So I'm 42, and I graduated from Syracuse University in 2002, and I had a finance degree. I grew up in upstate New York and expected to be in Manhattan after college. For those of you who can't remember, I can't really remember that well either, but there was a dot-com bubble, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s. And that bubble had burst by May of 2002 when I graduated college. And so, you know, finance majors like myself were going down to Manhattan and making $45,000 a year on a good day. And, you know, I put myself through school and had student loans, and just I didn't see how working in Manhattan for that much money was going to work out for me. So I got an opportunity to help set up a mortgage company in Michigan, and through just connections that I had. And so I moved out to Michigan and helped set up a mortgage company for a residential mortgage, right, for people who are buying houses. And that was a good market or job to be in the 2000s, up until the global financial crisis, you know, up until about 2009, when nobody could get a mortgage and banks just weren't lending anymore. So I was doing mortgages, and I was making some money, good money for a guy in his 20s. And I met a friend who is a real estate agent who was selling stuff that I was financing. And he had played around with property, and he convinced me to buy a house with him to flip. So the two of us put in like $15,000. We bought a distressed foreclosed house in the city of Detroit. And we put a little bit of work into it. And we put a renter in it, and then we sold it to an investor, you know, and then that type of asset today is called a turnkey house, right? So we did that. We sold the house, and we put the money back into two houses, and we sold those two, and we bought four. And then the global financial crisis hit, and I had to stop doing mortgages because nobody would lend. And so we focused on this distressed model of buying foreclosures, fixing them up and putting renters in and selling them. And it turned into a, you know, 100 to 200 house a year type of operation. And then in 2012, a guy named Oliver Chang was at Morgan Stanley. He wrote a white paper about how single family was the new asset class that institutions should look after. This is before Invitation Homes. This is before, you know, this is when they were all kind of looking and saying, I think there's an opportunity here. This is like when Warren Buffett said, you know, like, if you could manage it, you should go out and buy thousands of single family homes. And so we listened to that, and we raised a little money and started buying tranches of houses in the Southeast. Hmm. We became a high volume aggregator for institutional, you know, Wall Street type firms who were buying single family houses. And so between, I would say, you know, between like 2009 and 2016, I did about 3,000 houses.
Hmm. Goodness gracious.
I was like a residential house flipper,
mm-hmm.
on a very large scale. And we did deals in Michigan, Arizona, Atlanta, and Florida. So that was kind of like, that was my late 20s to my mid 30s. I've moved on from that partnership. Like it taught me a lot. We made a good living. We also made a lot of mistakes, you know, made money, lost money, but earned quite a bit of knowledge and expertise in the residential game. And so I left that partnership. I did a really large joint venture project after I left that in 2015, 2016, where an individual and I bought about 700 houses in Michigan and sold them all in like an 18-month period. And I was burned out. And so 2016 was kind of like a year where my wife and I and our two daughters we traveled a lot. And my wife is a coach, like a professional coach. And we did a lot of visioning on what we wanted to create. And she coached me like formally, like my business paid her business. And we met once a week, like over 100 times to put together, like, what is it that we want to accomplish in our next venture? And we felt that multifamily made sense because, you know, up until that point, while the money was good, it was a trader business. So, you know, we were being taxed, you know, on regular income level, and I wasn't retaining any of the real estate that I was spending so much time in. So the passive income wasn't there. And the future, you know, and building the wealth wasn't there, right?
Mm-hmm.
The balance sheet wealth. So we decided multifamily was the key. I connected with Hanan and Shmulek, my partners, and asked them if they wanted to start, you know, buying deals together. Actually, I said, you know, I want to go buy 10,000 units. What do you guys think? They said, okay, well, why don't we buy one deal and see how it goes? And we bought a deal and it went well. We seemed to like to work with one another. And so we formed GSH and here we are.
Love it. A couple of things I want to touch on. I want to go back to, because I think that there's some insights to glean from your experience when the mortgage crisis or the Great Recession happened. And in your world, that collapse to being in the mortgage space. What was that time in your life like, if you can go back to that? How did you navigate it?
That's a great question. So it was a scary time. It was a challenging time. And I'd like to say that all of my success, I had a roadmap and a plan. Okay. Like I wish I was that guy, but I'm not, right? I often have been thrust into different situations without a plan, just because of like what's going on around me. Like, you know, the beginning and the end of Forrest Gump, there's like a feather drifting in the wind. And
right.
That's kind of like the way his life went. And like, I don't consider myself as lucky as Forrest Gump, but like, that's just kind of how things have happened for me.
Yeah.
So I don't think that I didn't understand the extent of what was going on at that time. You know, I remember where I was when I saw that Lehman Brothers had went out of business, mm-hmm. but I didn't really like understand what that meant.
Sure.
For the banking industry and the economy. But and I had frustration and fear in me because what was making me money regularly and what I'd spent money to build a business of, you know, for residential mortgage just wasn't happening. You know, like I'd have borrowers with great credit, you know, doctors who should be getting loans, and banks were working against you at that point. You know, the underwriters that used to work with you were working against you. Nobody wanted to lend. They were fearful. So it was very hard, but we had this little house flipping operation going. And so what we did was we pivoted to focusing on how do we create fees managing people's properties besides just our own properties. And so we networked through LinkedIn and through like local networking groups. We just went after opportunities to keep paying our bills and to keep the lights on. And through that networking, we came across folks who are in need of inventory, right? And so we started to go out and try and figure out where is there a need, who needs inventory, and can we supply that need? And it went from smaller mom and pop investors trying to take advantage of the dramatic price reductions that were going on in the market. Then it became like overseas buyers who were like poking around in the United States, and you know, they needed people on the ground here, you know, to help find them inventory. And then it turned into more institutional style buyers. Mm. The same.
How fast did that transition take place? You know, obviously the crisis hit. Did you wind down the mortgage business completely and exit that business completely and immediately pivot into the, you had already started to invest in some single family fix and flip type stuff.
Yeah.
So there was already,
I was doing both. That was like my side hustle, right? Flips were like a side hustle. And then the mortgage business, like I always say, like, it didn't go out of business. It just stopped.
Got it.
It was like, 1 week you could do mortgages and another week you couldn't. And if I had stuck it out or went to like a larger firm, I'm sure I would have been able to figure it out. But I had this side hustle that was just my natural pivot.
Yeah, makes sense.
It was tight. I mean, the progression from doing some small flips to pivoting to doing it full time to getting to institutional was like a 3 to 4 year period. Right. Mm-hmm. We were focused on smaller investors and out of country buyers, but we did some wild stuff. I mean, like there was a group that really put us on to the idea that there were people from other countries who wanted to buy houses in the States because they bought like 100 houses the year before and totally got ripped off. And so there were two people who had helped market the houses and they were trying to solve their problem. And so we said, look, we can help you solve your problem. And you need more inventory, we can help you with that as well. Mm. I would travel to Australia and to the United Kingdom, and I'd get on stage and talk about people, the ability to buy a house that cash flows for $40,000-$50,000, and people couldn't believe it.
Mm-hmm. You know,
it was kind of a wild time.
Yeah. So let's push it forward just a little bit here, and let's talk about. Well, I've got to touch on this first. I mean, you mentioned buying large swaths of single family property on an institutional level.
Mm-hmm.
How was that done from a practical logistical standpoint? How does that happen?
Like all right. So you say practical logistical, but do you mean like how did we do that? How do we have money to do that?
Not necessarily. Like how does that even happen for one group to go in and buy? I mean, because this isn't like buying a 400 unit multifamily apartment building. This is buying individual assets of, you know, whatever your pricing was in the markets you were looking in. I'm guessing, you know, $100,000 on average. So these are thousands of transactions.
Well, I mean, this was back in 2012 and 13, you know, you could go to Atlanta and you could buy a house that's probably worth $400,000 today for like $60,000.
Got it.
So in Michigan and in more of the Midwestern states, it was $20,000 to $50,000.
Mm.
So, you know, we found out one morning I woke up, I used to do LinkedIn posts about having houses, you know, for sale. And every morning I'd wake up and I'd do like 20 posts in groups, you know, trying to get more people interested in who want to buy it. One morning I looked at and I saw a post from somebody else that was like, we give money to people who flip houses. And I was like, that sounds great. And so I created a relationship with a group that to finance us for our endeavors out of state. But sometimes we would buy, you know, we did a deal of over 100, I think it was like 107 houses in Nashville, Tennessee, from one bank.
Got it. So you're pretty much buying exclusively from banks in portfolios.
50% of the time we would do it that way. And the other time we would just aggregate. We would we set up a guy in the Southeast and my partner would travel and we would literally just pick up one at a time. And we knew the buy box of our institutional buyers, like the zip mm-hmm. code. say how many bedrooms, bathrooms, and we just buy them all, renovate them, and then we'd sell them all at once. So we might buy 75 houses over the course of 3 months, and then in month 5 or 6, we would sell them all at once.
Interesting. Cool.
Hey, real quick, before we get back to the show, if you and I haven't connected yet, head on over to canovocapital.com and subscribe to my investor network. From there, my team will be in touch to schedule a brief call. I'd love to connect with you and learn more about your investing goals, what you're working on, what you're looking to do in the future, and also let you know about some of the projects we're working on over at Canovo Capital. So go down into the show notes right now and click on the link, or just head on over to canovocapital.com and subscribe to my network there. And I look forward to connecting with you. Let's get back to the show.
All right. So 2016 happens. I mean, you bought 700 houses and sold them all in the same year.
We bought them all at an auction.
An auction. Okay. Yeah. So you bought all these in basically one transaction, and you sold them all, and you experienced a high level of burnout at that point. Your wife's a professional coach. I don't want to go into details of it, but I've got to ask, like, what's that like being coached by your wife? Like just a real high level. What was that like?
Look, I put up a lot of resistance with my wife over time. You know, like, she's always way ahead of the game in terms of, like, she can just see clearly when there's gaps or when there's, you know, she's got a master's degree in organizational development. Like, she just sees patterns and she sees it well ahead of time. But like me, I'm like the frog in the pot that boils and stays in it. So, like, you know, she knew that it was time for me to exit my last partnership, and I felt like, from some sort of loyalty, I needed to stay in it. Things weren't going well. It took me time. Like, when it was time for us to, we moved from Michigan to Florida. Like, it took her 3 years to convince me to do that. So, you know, sometimes it always ends up with her being right, but sometimes it just takes me time.
You're the turtle that she's got to drag along with her. Yeah.
But, like, you know, when, I don't know if you, you know, I'm sure that you've done, we really got into, like, spirituality and meditation and slowing things down and letting the universe help us to bring us, you know, setting out intention verbally as well as, mindfully. She was kind of at the forefront of all that. And so I was willing to listen. What she has the ability to do is just really sit down and ask me questions about what I want, because I'm an entrepreneur by nature. I'm your classic, like, C college student, right? Like, who had other priorities. I've got ADD. I can't sit through a class. I'd rather go out and just try and figure it out on my own. And I've got all these ideas and passions and swirling around in my head. And she has the ability to, like, you know, when we sit down together, kind of like help me download those thoughts into, like, an action plan. And so, you know, it's amazing. It's been amazing. It's brought us closer together, and it's also been difficult at times, often because of my own resistance.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. So you, with her help, you work through, and a lot of travel and time off, it seems, in 2016. Yeah. 2017, you decide, all right, let's go attack this multifamily thing. Had you been exposed to multifamily in any fashion prior to that? Like, why was it multifamily? Why not retail? Why not mobile home parks? Why not self-storage? What was it? How were you exposed to multifamily? And what made you think, hey, this is the path that I want to go down?
Yeah, another good question. I hadn't done multifamily projects like buy, fix up, hold, buy, fix up, flip, but we did do along the way in my single family ventures, we had various projects where there might be an out of state owner who came in and bought some multifamily projects. And along the way, we had a construction company, right? So the construction company did renovations on multifamily. And so I'd been exposed to what it was, right? And that it existed. And it was really, my wife, who's got a background in finance as well, and some friends of mine who are like, look, you know, who were one guy in particular who's a financial advisor, you know, said to me, you know, the cash you're making is great, And, you know, you may want to consider getting into real estate deals that you own long term, right? So it was, and so for me, I did what probably the folks listening to this podcast are doing. You know, I started listening and reading and realizing that the larger game that I was playing with single family was difficult, and that there's a bigger ball game to play in, that I could buy a house or I could buy an apartment building, and the conversation is really the same conversation in terms of transactionally raising money, you know. But I think I felt the most confident with residential because I had done so much already. It felt like a natural progression of my track record. So I'm always thinking from a marketing optic perspective, like how's
that going
to
look
to follow me if I've never done self-storage before? What's the path of least resistance, frankly? Like, I've done thousands of single family units. This, if anything, well, that'll help what I'm trying to do over here. If anything, it's going to be easier because they're all under one roof now, right? I can speak to residential construction, you know, because we renovated so many units. We even built houses, you know, so I just felt like I was more qualified to get into multifamily.
Makes sense. So you mentioned your two other partners. Yeah. When did they come into the picture and how was that relationship formed?
Yeah. So, I mean, for those out there who are trying to figure out, you know, how to structure, if you haven't put together a syndication yet or a partnership or looking to make a change, you know, I didn't want to go out and do a 20 unit building. That just, you know, for me inherently, it's not in my nature. I just wanted to go big. And so while I'd made money, my balance sheet wasn't as big as it needed to. And, you know, when you buy a multifamily property, you know, you have to get a mortgage and you have to have a net worth that's equal to at least the amount of the mortgage. You have to have liquidity, access to cash, typically at least 10% of the mortgage amount. And so I needed a strategic partner with a strong balance sheet. And that's why I approached my partners, and one in particular, I won't say which one. And he said, you know, that, and he and I had a relationship, like a friendly relationship, you know.
And how was that built? How were you guys originally connected?
We were connected through a mutual acquaintance when I was raising money, when I was knocking down houses in an affluent suburb in Michigan and building new ones.
Okay.
So he's introduced to me as a potential investor, and he wasn't an investor of mine, but we, you know, he was an older gentleman, older than myself. Mm-hmm. And really kind and well connected. And, you know, you go and I meet with him like every couple months, just because it was a nice friendship developing, you know? Mm-hmm. And then what happened actually was, this was in 2015. He had invested in about 25 single family houses in Detroit through a friend of his who owned and managed like 300. And his friend, unfortunately, unexpectedly had a heart attack and died. So all of a sudden, he has 25 houses in Detroit that he doesn't know what to do with. So he reaches out to me because that was my business. And I was able to buy all of his houses from him and transact. And we worked together very cordially and nicely. And so he saw that he saw how I operated from a business perspective.
Yeah. You know,
that was actually serendipitous, because when I left my previous partnership, I hooked up with somebody who needed inventory in Michigan, a turnkey seller who was doing business in Florida, and the market had gone up. So the returns he was offering were going down. So he needed a new market. I connected with the guy. So my future partner comes to me with 25 houses. This guy comes to me from Florida saying, let's start with about 20 houses. I was able to buy and sell those houses in the same day.
Mm.
And that launched me into the direction of, you know, being on my own and doing my own thing. But anyway, so we had transacted together, and so I was comfortable going to him and saying, hey, I'm thinking about making a move to multifamily. What do you think? So he introduced me to our third partner and said, who already had about 1,600 units in Detroit through a partnership that had run its course. And this third gentleman was looking at, you know, what's next. So the three of us kind of met and decided to do a deal together.
And so I assume that that first deal was typical syndication where, you know, you're probably doing the lion's share of the work. They're bringing the balance sheet and...
Yeah, I found the deal. I did the work. One of the guys had the balance sheet. One of the guys had the investors.
Got it.
So we put it together and did it that way.
And was that sort of, was there some intent behind that to say, hey, let's see how this one goes. And then if it goes well, we'll consider, you know, doing something bigger? Or was there just, hey, this was just a one-off deal initially?
Like I said, I went to them and said, I want to buy 10,000 units.
Oh, that's right. That's right. You know? Yeah.
And they were like, that sounds great. Right.
Let's start here.
Yeah. But we did it. It worked. It went well. And then, so then we formally organized GSH as an entity and we bought another 700 units that year. I mean, that was 2017. We bought 800 units that year and we didn't start. Our first closing was in April.
Wow. Yeah, that's some serious activity.
Yeah, but our second and our third deal, which we did in 2017, and then our fourth deal which was in early 2018, we utilized crowdfunding. Mm. So there was a company back then called Realty Shares,
right?
That doesn't exist anymore. That were good partners for us. They got us from like zero. Well, they got us from 64 units up to above. That's how many units my first property was that we didn't use them. They got us above 1,000 units in way less than a year. And then once we had 1,000 units, the conversations with investors started getting a little bit easier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we didn't use Realty Shares after that, but we still maintain really good relationships with Realty Mogul. Mm-hmm. They've been a great partner of ours. We did quite a few transactions with them since 2021, probably like eight.
And just so the other sponsors who haven't used a crowdfunding platform like that, how does the relationship work between sponsor and the crowdfunding platform?
Yeah, you know, they've got access to investors who are interested in this product type, and they'll vet you as a sponsor, and then once you're vetted, they'll vet your deals. You bring them a deal. I've got this opportunity. We're going to buy it. We'd love you to put it on your platform. They'll give it a look. Different crowdfunding platforms do it differently. Some will completely underwrite your deal and approve it. And some will just provide you the platform to put your deal up there. But they give you access to investors and they typically take a fee.
Is that a one-time fee or do they have an equity position in the deal?
Some might, like for example, you know, we structure our deals with a preferred return, right? Mm-hmm. A preferred return and then a promote split. Let's say my preferred return is 8%. A platform might offer their folks 7%, right? Okay. And take the spread. And then sometimes they have their fees are also tied to technology. So they'll charge the investors a technology fee. That's kind of a one-time upfront type of a fee or sometimes ongoing.
And are they coming into your deal more of a fund of fund model in the sense of they have their own fund, their investors in their platform invest into their fund, and then they write one big check into the deal? Or are the investors investing directly into your deal?
So Realty Shares back then did the fund type model where it was one entity. Realty Mogul doesn't do that. Their investors subscribe directly to us, but Realty Mogul handles all of the investor relations and client relations matters. Mm-hmm. So we only deal with one point of contact, which is Realty Mogul, and they deal with all of the underlying investors.
And have you been able to garner investors and bring them into your personal investor network through that experience with Realty Mogul?
No. I think a nature of that agreement with them is, you know, their investors are theirs.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we value that partnership. And so we respect that. We've had investors try to come around, you know, and we always send them back.
Understood. Okay, yeah. Great.
Because, you know, and then it happens with others. There's other influencers that will bring investors to us.
Sure. There are folks
that connect us with investors and we pay them a flat fee for those introductions. And when an investor tries to come around and come direct, We don't do that because it's bad business. You know,
yeah.
Like I'd rather have that investor belong to somebody else and have that person out there bringing me millions of dollars than trying to get a couple hundred thousand dollars on the side without them knowing. Like it's just not worth it.
And burning the relationship.
Yeah.
Okay, so this has been great conversation thus far. If you're okay on time to stay with us for a few more minutes, I actually want to get into your business as it is today and what you guys are focused on and some outlook. So we were going to go into a case study. I'm going to put that aside for the moment and ask you some more quick hitting questions. First and foremost, you guys have accomplished a lot in 5 years. I mean, you've acquired, you know, over $1 billion worth of multifamily. What's your outlook? I mean, we're recording the beginning of December here. Mm-hmm. What's your outlook on the market moving forward over the next 12 months? 2023, what does this look like for you? And how are you as a company navigating that?
Sure.
Understanding that you've already built up a substantial portfolio, but just interested in your insights.
So I want to answer your question, but I also want to say to everybody that, you know, it's great. I'm very fortunate. And it might feel like, wow, that guy, you know, if my 5 year ago self looked at my today self, he'd be like, wow, like that's where I just want to be. But, you know, like we were aggressive. We've got a great portfolio. 70% of it is stabilized and locked into fixed rate, long-term debt. And we've got a bunch of bridge loans that we're trying to navigate because interest rates have gone really high and we're
right.
I just did a webinar to all my investors yesterday and was just gave them access to me and to ask and answer questions about what that means, what bridge, because all of those business plans are different today than they were a year ago.
And absolutely.
We're focusing on capital preservation than like wild profitability like it's been for the last 10 years in residential. So even with success comes, you know, challenge. And so I wanted to say that, and because I think it ties into where we are with the current market. We haven't bought anything since June because, you know, I think until the Fed literally says, okay, we're done raising rates, the market's not really going to be in a stabilized place. Mm-hmm. I've seen that cap rates have been trailing interest rates. So interest rates went up higher, but the values that sellers are willing to accept on properties has been slower to move. Like we knew since we started in 2017 that at some point interest rates were going to go up. And there'd be a kind of a gap period of time where seller expectations needed to meet the market expectations. And we find ourselves there mm-hmm. right now, kind of in this purgatory of, you know, we're deal people. We, you know, I get the adrenaline when I've got a deal going and I haven't had one for 6 months. And that's okay. The blessing in disguise there is that we're, you know, when things are slower, you know, a spotlight gets and more urgent, maybe a spotlight gets shown on your operation and mm-hmm. So we're spending a ton of time and money focusing on getting ourselves better so we can be ready when opportunities come. I think that I'm starting to see seller expectations coming a little bit more in line based on the need or urgency to sell. I think that 2023 is going to be a continue to be like the end of 22, more of like a slower year transactionally. I think that everybody's talking about seeing distress. Like, I'm not sure how much distress we're going to see in 2023. Those of us with access to, you know, lenders, you know, like good relationships with lenders, brokers, et cetera, like we might see some deal opportunities. 2021, we bought 10 properties. Mm. This year, we'll buy two. Next year, I'm hoping to be somewhere in between.
Mm-hmm.
And, but, you know, I sent out a big correspondence to my investors a couple months ago explaining why pricing went up so high, explaining why, you know, returns on deals look different, and kind of trying to shift the paradigm of or the lens of how we look at multifamily deals, because we've all gotten used to like get in at a good cash on cash return, increase that cash on cash return. A lot of my investors, so I've raised $300 million in the last 5 years and I haven't taken any institutional checks. This is all like smaller accredited investors. I think my biggest check to date has been $7 million, but my next biggest check has been $1 million. So this is all like six-figure check, five and six-figure check. So I've got a very robust investor relations department. But I say that because kind of your smaller investors are more tied to like cash, often tied to cash on cash returns rather than IRR. We're more long-term minded. We're more income minded. We've never been like IRR conscious. I mean, we market to an IRR because some people want to see it, but we're not in that kind of fun 3 to 5 year in and out cadence. But I've had to share with my investors, look, you know, this is the, I think multifamily is going to be less about high cash on cash returns for the foreseeable future. I think that multifamily is going to be more intrinsically the whole deal, you know, and if there's a sale within the next 10 years, what does the IRR look like during that time period? And what does the tax advantage look like through accelerated depreciation, right? So when we buy our properties, if somebody invests $100,000 with us, typically they get a loss that year, anywhere from $75,000 to $150,000, right? Like that's a huge benefit to our investors. And so looking at things more through that lens of tax advantage and the whole deal, rather than how much cash and cash am I going to get in the first year or two, because it's not going to be a lot.
Yeah, makes sense. So as you look back on this journey that you've been on, what's been the most challenging part of growing your business to the point that it's at today?
I think that, you know, I just said that when things slow down, you know, a spotlight gets shown on inefficiency. I think that, there's been challenges all along the way, right? I mean, early on, it was, you know, knowing that I wanted to buy $100 million deals, but only had investor backing to buy $20 million deals, right? So we grew organically through the confidence of our investors and our track record. And I think that that approach, even though we bought a lot in 5 years, we had a measured type of cadence to that growth. But that was challenging to me, you know, because I want to go out and I want to own 10,000 units in 2017, right?
Right.
So that 9,000 number includes some deals that me and my partners did beforehand. GSH officially has purchased about 7,400 units in the last few years, just for clarity.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
We haven't gotten to 10,000 units yet, but we will. Our goal for the next 5 years to 2027 is to buy another 15,000 units. So we'll be above 20,000 units is what our goal is, which I think we'll accomplish with the team we put in place. But I think that my biggest challenge is understanding and seeing my own limitations in business. I'm great at creating business. Mm-hmm. I'm good at communicating and gaining trust through action with investors. I'm good at providing confidence to lenders and sellers. I'm not so great at creating an efficient operation behind me.
Mm-hmm.
This year, like my wife has always coached me in the wings. I asked her to come in and help organize our organization within, because we're not going to be able to get to 20,000 units if we're operating it the way the C grade entrepreneurs, you know,
right. The hard driving visionary that starts a lot of things.
Yeah. Exactly. So I think the biggest challenge is the balance between what I know and what I don't know, you know?
So that leads me to another question, which is, what would you say is the most critical role, aside from your role, what's the most critical role in your business today?
It's a good question. And I want to think about the answer without taking up too much time.
No, you're fine. Take the time you need.
It's a difficult question to answer because today there are a lot of, you know, the quadrants of like urgent, unimportant, urgent,
right,
important, you know, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of important, urgent stuff going on in the business because of the shifting dynamic in the economy, interest rates spiking so high, along with expenses, you know, rents flattening out a little bit, evictions taking longer than anybody ever expected. So there's a lot of challenges on our plate. So it's hard for me to pick one, because I would feel like that would discount the others that are going on. But if I had to pick one, I couldn't. I want to give the credit to my wife, Jamie, who's head of organizational development, because she's she's really come in and completely turned around our company. She's created a culture within our organization. We think that our culture is our competitive advantage to attract and retain, you know, top talent. And that's critical for where we are today and for our future growth and sustainability. And asset management is like super important because we've got this big portfolio and it's up to us as stewards and fiduciaries of our investors' capital to preserve that capital and make a profit off of it, right? But then like, how do you do that without efficient construction and accounting? You know what I mean? So yeah. It's very symbiotic. It's hard to just pick one.
Understood. So everybody's facing unique challenges. There's great opportunities with deals that may have been acquired over the last 3 to 5 years, some great things going on with those deals. And then there's also unique challenges. You've alluded to some of those.
Yeah.
Well, I'm actually going to ask the question a little bit differently. Let's do it this way. Considering the unique market that we're in, you got into the business in 2017. There's probably not a better time, maybe 2015.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. To have gotten into the commercial multifamily business.
Yeah.
Let's say you're advising your, I don't know if you have kids, but you're, yeah. I think you did allude to that earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's say that you're advising your son who's just getting out of college, has a finance degree with all the ambition to go in and get into the real estate world in the large commercial multifamily space. How would you guide them? How would you, what would be the steps you would tell them to take over the next 12 months to get them headed in the right direction with their business?
So just, and for the record, when I started buying in 2017, there were investors that came that said to me, "Don't you think are you sure you want to buy multifamily right now?"
yeah, I'm sure place. That's the case. Yeah,
and
yeah.
It freaked me out.
You were early.
It freaked me out, and I was like, you know what? If the market goes down, I'll just keep buying and lower my basis. But thank God I didn't stay on the sidelines, right?
Yeah.
I think that, so, you know, look, depending on where a person is, my advice is going to be different, right? So going off of your question of who's just coming out of college,
yeah,
to go get a job as an analyst for a real estate private equity firm.
Got it.
And learn how to underwrite deals and learn how the business works and see what experienced people are doing. I mean, if it was my son and he was open to it, or my daughter, and she was open to it, I'd say come be an analyst at our firm or go out and be an analyst somewhere else. Because I got in 2017 and have accomplished a lot, but there was almost 10 years of trial and error and a lot of error in single family stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, I didn't just, you know, decide I wanted to do residential in real estate investment in 2017 and pick up and got lucky because the market was there. I mean, I think there are people that did and did quite sure. well, but usually a lot of the folks who got into multifamily in over the last 5 years on a smaller syndicated level, I think came from the single family world. Right. Yeah. So if somebody's getting started, I think that the easiest path and maybe the smartest path is realizing, and Gary Vee talks about this a lot, right? Like, you have time, right? You want to be the millionaire today, and more than likely you'll be there 10 years from now. So what's the most strategic path? Go into a rock solid, great company that's going to help build your resume and your knowledge. And build your connection, be a hard worker, be an everything person, be an asset to that group, move up in that group, and be clear about your intentions of wanting to own eventually. Get a relationship with a decision maker, a power person who will say, you know what, I value you. I'm grateful for your work over the last 5-7 years. When you want to go out on your own, when it's time, I'll do everything I can to help you. So again, I say like, that's somebody coming out of college, right? If you've been doing it for a while and want to get into syndication, it's all about time and networking and finding a deal. You know, in 2009, there were a million deals and nobody wanted to invest. because there was so much fear about this global financial crisis. They didn't know where things were going. There is money today for multifamily. The question are where are the deals? So if you can find a deal, you should be able to find the money. If you can find a good deal, you can send me an email. You know, I'll look at it, because deals are hard to come by right now because we're kind of in that in-between space that I talked about earlier.
Yeah. That's a great way to end the show. And I've kept you way longer than we anticipated, so I appreciate you being gracious with Happy your time. Before I let you go, what's the best way for our listeners to connect with you and your team and learn more about what you guys have going on?
Yeah, so go to our website, www.gshrealestate.com, and fill out a form. That'll get you on our mailing list so you can see deals that we're doing and get information. If you wanted to reach out and have a conversation with me and get some advice, I'm happy to pay it forward that way. My email is gideon@gshrealestate.com. That's gideon@gshrealestate.com. Shoot me an email. I'll do my best to set up a time to chat.
Love it. Well, Gideon, this has been one of my favorite episodes that I've recorded in the last little while. And so it's been an enjoyable conversation hearing about your story and coming from the mortgage industry and having to pivot and getting into the fix and flip and then really scaling that business up is incredible in and of itself. And then making another pivot into the multifamily space, acquiring $1 billion worth of multifamily over the last 5 years. A great story. And thanks for sharing your insights with us. For all of you that are listening, if you've enjoyed the conversation with Gideon, go down in the show notes right now, click on one of those links that Gideon just referenced, reach out to him and his team. And Gideon, I appreciate you coming on, and I look forward to staying in touch with you down the road.
Yeah, I hope so. Thanks so much, David. Appreciate it.
Hey, before you go, if you and I haven't connected yet, please head on over to canovocapital.com. You can join our investor network or download our free passive investor's guide to multifamily syndications. Either way, I'd love to connect with you personally. Also, I just want to thank you for listening to the show and providing feedback and reviews. If you haven't already, please, please, please take a second and leave us a rating and written review. This helps us to be found by new listeners and helps us attract great guests in the future. Thanks again for listening to the show, and I hope you have a great day.